All right, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome, everyone. Hope this has been a good conference for you. Last session of the conference. So you've seen my Twitter handle now, so you know everything to know about me. So I need to know a little bit about you. With all these people in the room, how many of you have done Angular development? Looks like 40%, 35%. How many of you have done WinJS development? Four. People, no. Okay, well, that's good to know. That gives me a good sense of where we are as a group. So the abstract for this session that gave the justification for putting Angular and universal applications together simply as the fact that Angular is a robust, feature-rich framework for building modern web applications. And that was the justification for putting it together with WinJS to build universal apps. Some of you, like myself, might be a bit skeptical. So the first thing we're going to try to do is provide a little bit more justification. Now, in all honesty, I mean, part of this, if you're coming at it from a dev perspective, which I definitely do, Angular is new. It's open source, it's cool, it's innovative, it is full-featured, and it's getting massive use right now, right? So that alone gives it the attention that it deserves. But that's probably not everything, right? I mean, sure, it's just cool and fun to smash together technologies. We know that they're mostly made to work together. It's all web technologies, right? So that's not too far of a stretch. But if we want to roll this out on real applications, we're going to have to provide a little bit better justification, like the business justification. So why would we want to use these together? Well, and that's actually how we're going to structure this conversation for the next hour, is around the requirements that we're trying to address. We're not just going to smash these together and use WinJS wherever we want to and use Angular wherever we want to. There are a couple of places where they clash, where they don't work well together. And so we'll have to make some decisions. And one of the predominant requirements that we're going to try to get to is reuse. That's the biggest one from a business perspective that we can get value from. The value add is the ability to reuse assets across phone applications, tablet applications. We're not going to be showing it here, but for those of you who are in Damien's talk this morning, you saw Cordova, and it's completely reasonable that you could use universal apps to build the phone and tablet versions, and Cordova to build the Android and iOS versions. And hopefully we'll have a chance to talk a little bit more about when and why you may or may not do that. Why Angular? It is full-featured. And by full-featured, for those of us who have been doing WinJS development for a while now, there are some things that it doesn't have. For example, two-way data binding, which turns out to be pretty useful when you're building single-page, very responsive, native-looking applications. And so that's quite important. One of the great things about Angular is it also has a routing, a navigation framework. Now, there is navigation in WinJS applications, but they work very differently, and we're gonna drill into that as well. But why WinJS? Why not just build the whole thing with Cordova? Well, you could actually, but there are two kinds of apps. When I think of mobile apps, mobile phone apps and tablet apps, there's really, well, especially mobile phone apps, there's really two kinds. There are the kinds that have a UI that is specific to the app, and then there are the kind that have UIs that cater to the platform they're on, right? We've all used, for those of us who have used Windows Phone, it has a particular look and feel. There's a default look and feel. Same with iOS, same with Android, sort of. It has design guidelines that you can adhere to if you want to give the user a consistent feel on that platform. We're going to be focused more on the latter one, more on the one that does play to the strengths of the platform rather than something like a game or a music type of app, which can get away with building its own UI and look exactly the same. Like Damien's this morning had a very consistent look across all the platforms. It didn't really tap into the platform, and that is completely reasonable for a lot of different apps. I think from a design perspective, it tends to be a little harder, But leaning on the platform and its design guidelines gives us a target that we can go toward. And that's more what we're going to be focused on for this. And so, to that end, WinJS is appropriate to use some of its built-in controls to give us that familiar look and feel. Now, because we're smashing together these different technologies, we're going to have to make decisions on when to use certain ones and how to structure the app. I'm a bit of a stickler when it comes to how the code is structured, where the coupling happens, and I pay quite a lot of attention to that. And actually how the project structure, the solution, is put together, where the folders are and what files are in which folders. So we're going to have to make some decisions. What are we going to use to drive those decisions? First and foremost, we're going to try to optimize reuse. This is the web. There's a lot of commonality, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and images, and we can reuse a considerable amount of that across all of the different platforms we're targeting. In order to do that, we're going to have to isolate each of these pieces. We're going to have very clear boundaries and very clear boundaries of coupling around these modules. So we're going to have to think in a very modular way. I don't know if it's just salespeople, BDMs, marketers, but maybe it's even with developers and architects as well. But when you're working with the web, there's an assumption that there's going to be a lot of reuse. If you're saying you're going to use web across the web and mobile and other targets, then there's an expectation that you're going to get a lot of reuse. There are decisions you can make that make reuse very difficult. And there's obviously other decisions you can make to make that easier. So we're going to have to think very modular. But at the same time, as I said earlier, we want to leverage the platform for all it offers, especially in a kind of app that leans on its look and feel on the platform and the design guidelines of the platform. So this is the rub, right? This is the challenge of maximizing reuse, but still leaning on what we can get from the platform. So let's first look at a little trivial example. Let me switch over to here. We'll start with the Windows app, or the Windows Phone app. So I've built it's a very small app. It's not even a complete app, but it's just going to give us enough to have something to look at. So we've called it Meditations. So we'll just launch this. Loads pretty quick. And this is just a meditation timer, is all it is. So it just gives us the ability to say we want a new session. We can look at our history of, my mouse isn't working. There we go. So we can see previous sessions that we've done. We can see we can have presets. So if we know that we always meditate for a certain amount of time, and meditation, certain, it could be Zen meditation. It could also be like the tomato timer, that where you basically just want to make sure that you're focused for an X amount of time and then take a break. You could use it for that too. Or you could just repeat your last one. So if we go into new session, you can see that we get on the new session, we can specify the number of minutes. We can change this to 1. And we can start it. And we won't wait for this to finish, but when it's finished, it could make a sound. It's going to show a little smiley face and that kind of stuff. But this just gives you a sense of what we're working with. And that's really the extent. That's enough information for us. You'll notice a couple of things. One, take notice of just this timer control. We have an app bar down here that's consistent across the Windows Phone. This is all, of course, done with in a universal app. We'll have a look at the code in a moment. And we have a back button, a hardware back button. This is an important distinction when you're operating across phone and tablet, where you don't have a hardware back button on the tablet. And if you go back, you'll notice that these home tiles also, we're gonna get some reuse out of some of this, but we're going to have to think very deliberately about how we get reuse. And the other thing to take note of are the page transitions. It's using a turnstile animation. So as we go forward and backward through this, it's that kind of folding. It's very typical of Windows Phone. And you'd imagine that if you hit the back button again, then you'd go back out of the app, just like you would in a normal Windows Phone app. So we have some very specific transitions and some certain pieces of the app that we want to reuse. Let's switch over. My mouse is not happy. Let's switch over to the tablet version. You can see we get a little, obviously it looks different. We want to try to maximize the screen real estate, try to bring in some more graphics. But you'll also notice that we have the app bar, again. We also have these tiles. Hover is appropriate on the tablet, naturally. And if we go into new session, then you can see that we also have this familiar timer that we can also work the same way. But there's obviously some differences here. I mean, don't know if you noticed it or not, but the animation's very different. This is very typical of a Metro-style UI app. And there's a back button, a software back button. And we don't have a software back button on the phone because that's completely inappropriate. That's what the hardware back button's for. So there's a number of things that are different. There's a lot of things that are similar. You can argue about my design skills. I certainly would probably agree with you. But yeah, but it's enough to wrap our heads around to drive some points home. So let's head back over to the deck. And so we talked about the back button. We talked about the transition animations, the differences between the two. We looked at the timers, the tiles and the timer control. Both of those were very similar across both experiences, and the app bar was consistent across both experiences. And we're going to continue to come back to these in a little bit more detail. But first, let's just get our heads around what a universal app looks like for WinJS. So if we come back over, let me close this. Get my Visual Studio ready. About that. So hopefully you can see this in the back. This is just rather than spending the time to go project new, honestly, the only thing I've done is project new. I'll just do it to show you where it is. Let's see, new project. Here's our new projects. I've chosen JavaScript. And this is just a universal app. We have a number to choose from. There's a blank one that does not include navigation or the hub controls. It's hub/pivot because the hub control is specific to the Windows Store app and the pivot control is specific to the Windows Phone app. So there's two different controls today that is likely to change in the future. And I just said, okay, but I'm not going to do it again. The only other thing I did was I added some NuGet packages to make a point. But before I make that point, let's have a look at the rest of this. So we have a Windows Store app. We have a Windows Phone app. And we have this odd dude down here, this shared thing. It's not a folder. It's not a project. It's like a, I don't know how you'd call it, right? But it's a combination between a folder and a project. It has some attributes of a project, others of a folder. It has some limitations. Now, before we get into the limitations, the idea behind this is all of your shared code goes into the shared folder project. During a build, it's copied to the other two projects. And it matches based on path. So if we have something in Pages Hub, we have these Pages Hub things here. All of these are going to get copied to Pages Hub up here. Now, you'll notice that we have some clashes. Anything in the project, as you would expect, stays. Anything in shared does not overwrite what's in the project. So the project wins. All your overrides can go in there in your project. Although, I'm not convinced that putting defaults in your shared, and this is just a conceptual, maybe philosophical way of thinking about shared projects or shared code. Now, we've been able to do this in Visual Studio for a long time, just linking files, right? So when you can just link to another project or link to another folder, and that all works. It doesn't work with the shared folder, but that's because the build does it for you. But we'll get into the limitations in a second. So everything gets copied from shared into the projects unless it's already there, and then it stays. It's pretty clear, right? And so some of these, obviously what's nice about this is we can see that Hub HTML and CSS are specific to the project. Hub.js is not. It's shared across both, and that's actually pretty common because it's the UI that often changes. If the concept of a particular page is the same in the phone app and in the tablet, the UI would likely look different, but the view models, the code behind it, could look very similar, right? It could have the same type of behavior. So that's not unreasonable. This shared project there's a number of odd things about this setup, these universal projects. One, The shared project doesn't support linking. It also doesn't support NuGet packages, which is really unfortunate, because what you'll notice is as I've added NuGet packages to both of these projects, I have scripts under both projects. Duplicated code. Now, you could argue, and I'm a bit of a stickler about this, if 90% of you said, yeah, Don, so that's fine, I would say, yeah, that's fair enough, right? I just tend to be a bit neurotic that way. I don't like duplicated code, even if it's not my code, and even if I am just referencing it. So what you'll notice in the Meditations app is I actually did copy it out and put it into a vendors folder. There's a reason I like putting third-party controls in vendors, because V is at the end, and it always sorts at the end where I don't need to see it. It's the minutiae that I get wrapped around, so I apologize. So we have the scripts folder in both. Now, what the good thing about this, the best possible world would be if that shared folder supported NuGet packages. That way we could have it once and we could easily update it. So by having it in the scripts folder and having it duplicated, we still get to update it. So we can still update our NuGet packages, which is pretty powerful. My vendors folder, I'm on my own, right? I'm going to have to go and figure out another way. So if I were to build out a production app using these technologies, I would most likely invest in a little bit of grunt tasks. I would probably create a bit of some build tasks so that I could both have the benefit of easily updating things and to also not have duplication. Oh, and I tried, actually. For those of you who are familiar with the project structure, this isn't working, is it? The project structure of these files, this is the proj items. This is referenced from the shared project file. You can break these up, this closed element, you can break it open and put a link element in it. I tried hacking it that way, still didn't work. So it's not going to support linked files even if you try to hack it. So that'll save you a little bit of time. What else to say about this? I think that's about it. Yep. So you could keep your stuff in scripts. That's completely logical. I just didn't for our demo app. But that gives us a couple of things to look at, right? So let's see what I missed. So we talked about sharing. Now, the other thing I want to mention about sharing, this is a bit of a philosophical way to reason about shared code. So you can't think about, in a universal app, you can't think about your phone app and your tablet app being separate. They're sharing code at a code sharing level, right? Not at a referencing a package level, not at a referencing a DLL level, because of course we won't be doing that, but actual shared code. So you can't assume that these projects are going to evolve independently. That's part of the problem why I don't like the two scripts and the copies of our third-party libraries. I like them all the same. Because they're so reliant on that shared code, you don't want these apps to evolve independently. So that's an important aspect. If you're doing this in XAML or you're able to break out things into NuGet packages or Node packages or Bower packages, you have a lot more control over dependencies and you have more control over the evolution. But that's just something I think it's important to note about these universal apps. Good. Angular. So there's a lot of things to like about Angular. In all honesty, I liked Angular more before I knew it. Angular is really powerful. And about 60%, did I say? People in here have used Angular, so that's probably the 60% that laughed. It's a fantastic framework. It's a fantastic piece of engineering. It's useful, and it is awesome at the 80%. If you're living within the stream, if you're in the middle of the stream and you're doing Angular with the way that it's designed, you're loving life. As soon as you get outside of it and you have to know what the digest does or even apply, you're getting outside the 80%. And that's when things start to get unfortunate because Angular has its own event loop, right? And so And that causes race conditions, which we'll talk a little bit more about how we got around some of those. But for those of you who aren't as familiar with Angular, a module is the highest level of code reuse. In most apps, you can just have one. Your app will be a module, right? And it has other dependencies. And all of those dependencies are managed through dependency injection. And that's what the injector does. The injector, things with a dollar sign are from Angular. And that is a service provided by Angular to do the dependency injection. So when you specify a module, when you create a module, you specify its dependencies, and those are injected in, and you have some control over that. There are some other types of objects in Angular, and they all are basically providers. So the dependency injector needs to know the recipe for how to construct your objects, whether they're Angular objects or whether they're yours. And that recipe is in the form of a provider. Now, there's a really popular way of getting code reuse in Angular is to create a service. And a service is just it's a kind of provider. A factory is a kind of provider. A constant and a value are also types of providers. And using providers gives you a way to configure that recipe so the injector knows how to build that thing, that piece of reusable code for you. And then there's specials. And specials are provided by Angular. And those are things like the controller, directives, filters. These are types that you'll have to learn. And when you learn Angular, for those of you who do, you'll know about directives and controllers and those types of things, right? So this is the really high level of Angular, and we'll see some of this as we go through more code. It doesn't take very long when you're building a WinJS app, a universal app in JavaScript, to run into the dynamic content security error, right? So this is some security that is actually really good to have, and I've not heard anyone in the industry or anyone that's done these types of apps complain about this, right? This is actually a security constraint that Windows puts on it that is useful. And to show how useful it is, prior to jQuery 2.0, you would get this. They fixed it with jQuery 2.0, so you don't see this anymore with jQuery. You do see this with Angular because Angular uses jQuery, which has not fixed this yet. So to give you just the idea of what this is, there are certain functions in the DOM that allow you to inject nodes, code, that isn't safe. The inner HTML and outer HTML in particular are not safe. Inner text, outer text, they are safe. What's unsafe about it is you could have a script tag that gets an inner HTML and it gets parsed and run, right? So if that's coming from a place that you don't trust or that the DOM doesn't know about, then you're going to have this problem. There are a number of ways online that people have fixed this with Angular. One of these is to edit the Angular source code. I hope I don't have to get into why this is not a good idea, right? Because you've immediately caused more pain when you want to upgrade Angular, and it's just, that's not the kind of precedence that you want to set. So I don't agree with that. You can, if you have jQuery referenced when Angular loads, Angular will use the jQuery version that you have referenced. So you can basically easily swap out jQuery with a jQuery version that fixes this, and that is another one. I've found in my Angular development that jQuery is completely sufficient, because most of the data binding Angular is doing for you anyway, so I find that I don't even use jQuery very much in my Angular apps. I'd be interested to hear from others as well. So I didn't even try that version, or that option. There's also a directive called NGCSP, the Content Security Policy, and this prevents the eval, JavaScript eval code from running, and some other things. It recommends you use this when you're building, like, Chrome extensions, for example, would be a good time to use that. That actually did work for me for a while. There are some things that you can do inside custom directives that will break that it doesn't account for. It doesn't directly fix the inner the inner text and or the inner HTML and outer HTML problem. But what does work is this script from Microsoft Open Technologies. You can find the script on GitHub, and I have a bibliography in the deck for those of you who, I'm going to reference a lot of things, and so there's a list of lists that you can see, and there's a link to this GitHub page. But where you can also find this, as Damien probably knows, is that it's in the default package when you create a Cordova app with the new hybrid devices package in Visual Studio. What this does is it's the first script that you list in your HTML page, and it will, I guess, monkey patch those functions so that you won't get that error. So it fixes it for Angular and for older versions of JS. It'll fix it for all third-party libraries, not just Angular. And that has worked for me wonderfully. It's worked really well. They do claim that there could be a small performance hit, but I've not noticed it. And it probably depends on other features that you're using as well. But that's something you're going to run into and something to be aware of. And that's easily the best fix I've seen yet on getting around it. You can wrap. And so the editing the Angular source code basically means wrapping all those functions that do that in a unsafe local function, exec unsafe local function. It's part of, it's inside WinJS. So that's how you would edit it, but that's really not recommended. So let's dive into some code. First, we're going to talk about routing and navigation. This was one of the more challenging things that I had to deal with in this app, because WinJS has its own way of doing navigation. So there's a navigation library inside WinJS, and when you choose a hub or a navigation template, I think just about all except blank, really, come with the navigation file to do WinJS navigation. Angular does navigation differently. Basically, the way WinJS does it is all of the HTML that you reference, it jams it inside of the body tag of your default HTML, and it just augments all of your CSS and script tags. So it just continues piling on inside. That's the way WinJS does it. Angular does it very differently. It actually changes the location, your window.location, what you would see in your URL bar. So Angular does it very differently. Angular has a token, the view, ng-view. I'm using something a little different, which we'll get to. But it's basically a placeholder, a token, where it's going to take the page you've navigated to and jam it in. So you have a little bit more, I think, a lot more flexibility. And there's some other things that are really nice that are available with Angular. So let's have a look. So we're going to switch over to this other project. This is the code for meditations. And the first thing we're going to look at is this routes. And I'll show you where it is. It's inside of our shared code. And I know that we haven't seen this code yet, so I'll try to be a bit slow. So in our shared folder, this is everything that's under shared. It's very common with an Angular app to have a folder called app and put all of your Angular-based code inside that. So we have this routes. And I guess before we do routes, let's look at app.js. I'm using a single app.js for both projects because they really don't have different dependencies. It would not be unreasonable to have two different app.js's, one for the phone and one for the tablet, but I was able to get away with just one. You can see what we were talking about earlier. This is our app module. Because we're passing an array after the name of our module, these are the dependencies that our module depends on, and I'm passing in UI router. So this is not the default router that comes with Angular. There's a whole other project called UI router, UI, Angular UI, I think is basically the name of the project. This is engineering that's happening outside the Angular team, and they are building some wicked cool stuff that just tacks right onto Angular and adds a lot of value. One of the most valuable pieces they've built, in my opinion, is this router. It gives you the ability to have multiple views. It's based on state and not location, right? So the normal Angular router is based on the location you're navigating to. This is based on page states, and you can have multiple placeholders inside of a single view that you can update, and all with navigation. And it also has some really nice navigation features, which we'll get to. So this is where I'm putting in UI router, and there's really nothing else I need to do in the app. So let's have a look at routes. Routes is where we set up UI router. And like I said, it's based on states. This gives us the ability to have named routes. You don't get named routes with just WinJS development. So this is definitely a whole value add that you get just by using Angular, or specifically UI router. Named routes, for those who have used them either on your backend or in other frameworks, are really nice because it allows you to create tokens. These are basically tokens: home, repeat last, new session. These aren't addresses. These are just locations, or they're just tokens. I can later point them to whatever pages and resources I need to. That's nice, because then if you decide I want to rename this page, or I want to change the path to it, all you have to do is change it in one place, because everywhere else in your app is using that token, which is really nice. So this is all I'm doing. I have a URL, and this is what it uses for the location, and then the template is just the code that it's going to load up. Now, so that's just routing, and that's how we've set up the routes inside the app. So when I can create links using what's called an SREF, and this is also part of UI router, an SREF references that token, right? So I could say SREF equals home, and it will then evaluate this object and then make the appropriate navigation change. Really nice. However, this doesn't address what we were talking about earlier with the navigation. So with navigation, navigation happens very differently. So what do we use and not use with Angular and WinJS? There's a couple of options. There's a really good blog post by Oliver Lohman, and I have a link in the bibliography. He takes a certain approach. He tacks on to WinJS's navigation. WinJS's navigation is a bit weird. It's completely different than window.navigation, the way the DOM normally works, but it does maintain the stack. So basically all the places that you navigate within the app are maintained in a stack that it manages, right? I could have taken that approach. That's certainly the approach Oliver took in his blog post, so you can see that approach. I took a different approach where I just thought it's just an array, and managing an array is pretty easy, so I just did it myself. So let's have a look at what that code looks like, and you'll see how simple the implementation is. So this is a service. So this is a type of provider, if you will, in Angular. I called it Navigator. I also made this a completely different module. The unfortunate thing about this code is that I named the module and the service the same. So for someone, it does take a bit of another, it's a hiccup, right? So I would fix this. I just didn't want to mess with it before the talk. So I have a module called Navigator, and it has a service called Navigator. And that's this code here. So inside the service, I have basically three functions. I have a can go back, a go back, and a register, so that it can register the event handlers that are happening. So first, if we look at the app again, this is the thing that bootstraps the whole app. I call Navigator register as soon as the app loads. And what's happening in that register, I'll scroll down just a bit, right here, is in this register we set up three event handlers. One of them is to UI router. So we're not having to, this is the way that we're tapping in to what the user has clicked on. What UI router does is throws an event after you've navigated. So after the navigation was successful, UI router throws an event, and all I want to do is basically say, if we're going back, then just say that we're not going back anymore. But if we aren't going back, we need to add that. We need to push that new location onto the array that I'm calling nav history. So we set up that so we can make sure that when we navigate to a new location, we can capture it. The other thing we're doing, and this is strictly for the phone, because the phone has a hardware button, we have to, that event is thrown on WinJS application on call, on backclick. So when that event fires, this would only operate on the phone. This just gets ignored on a tablet. It never fires, actually. And so all this is doing is it's using RootScope and broadcasting an event. So when we click the hardware back button on the phone, that's throwing this event that I'm just calling the go back event, is like Navigator go back. right? It's just a string. Now, the way that the on back click works is if you return true, it means that you handled it and that it will not exit out of the app. If you return false, then it will let you jump back out of the app and back into the app that you were in before or your desktop, right? So that's how we're determining whether we're doing that or not. And then there's also a, when that event fires, now you're thinking, wait a minute, Don, you're broadcasting this event here when we click it, but then you also have this, you're also listening for the event here. Remember earlier when I said that Angular has its own event loop and that you can get race conditions? One of the ways that you can get that is that when you, now, the normal way of going back, you're doing a web app, you're doing it in Angular, and you need to navigate back. How do you do it? Normally, it's window.history.back. You call that back function. That actually changes the address, and everything works. For some reason, trying that in the tablet app, or in the phone app, it changes the URL before the event loop can capture it, causing a race condition, thinking it knows something has changed, but when it checks to see what's changed, it's the same and goes, and there's a 10 iteration limit on that digest loop that if it sees the same thing, because it actually does a count, and if it hits 10, you get an exception. So that race condition was the best way that I found around it was just to use events, and that event, the event firing allowed us to not have to worry about keying off of window.history. So that's how the navigation works. And the only other thing is that this is all pretty straightforward. Can go back is obviously if there's something on the stack. When the app loads, I navigate to the home page. So that's obviously the first thing on the navigation stack. And all this is doing is just determining whether we're going back or not, popping things off the stack if we are, and so forth. So it's pretty straightforward. So I think it's pretty simple. It's a module, which means that we can rip and replace it. We could offer another navigation module to a different app if we needed to. And I think this tends to work fairly well. Let's head back over and see what we missed. I think we covered most of this. Hopefully that was clear. And also, hopefully you found that the fix wasn't that erroneous. It wasn't that much. It's a really decoupled module that we can just inject in through dependencies. Animations are actually pretty straightforward. See why I couldn't walk around? Because I'm constantly kind of... All right. Animations. So if we look back at our project, this is also in shared code under... under WinJS. So remember earlier I was talking about having clear boundaries around where in WinJS is used and where it's not, and I found that having this WinJS folder allowed me to really put all my WinJS specific code in one place so that I knew where it was, and I almost couldn't find it. So so that's where the navigator was and the animator. So let's have a look at the animator. It's pretty straightforward, really. The way that Angular animation works is you define the name of a class and then what happens when that class is applied. So if we look over, where did I put that? That would be, I believe that's under shell? Yeah. So there's a couple of shells. This enter page is the name of this animation. So all we're doing in this animator is, remember, this goes back to the point of using the platform for what we want to use it for what it offers, right? WinJS has all of these animations that are specific to the experience of using Windows Store apps and Windows Phone apps, so it's completely logical to use the same animations, and this is a really simple solution for hooking in Angular's animation with the animations provided by WinJS. So that's a pretty straightforward approach. This app does not need it, but the other thing to note, because you may run into this in other scenarios, is promises are used in both Angular and WinJS. Unfortunately, the promises spec allows for some interpretation, and there's a handful. There are two main camps for how libraries use promises. Unfortunately, Angular's in one and WinJS is in the other. This is just also a pretty straightforward. There's two functions, two Angular promise and two WinJS promise that takes in the opposite promise and translates them. I'm not having to use this here, but I think it's an important thing that you could easily run into this if you need to listen for a WinJS. If you do run into that, I would also highly recommend that you take that code, ring fence it into somewhere else so that it's very clear that it has a dependency on WinJS. On that point, real quick, yes, there are, the WinJS team, for those of you who don't know, has gone completely open source. All the WinJS code is on GitHub, and they're actually claiming to, they're returning to their roots, which is the browser. I was a bit surprised by that. So WinJS started focusing on the browser, then went to more Windows Store apps, and then Windows Phone, and it's actually returning back to the browser. So I've not used it in web scenarios. I've used a lot of WinJS. Have a look at it. I'm not a huge fan, but don't take my word for it, right? I would probably go with Angular, but we can never underestimate Microsoft, especially when they put their mind to something. So if they're going to invest in WinJS, then it very well could be a real competitor in that kind of front-end framework-y space. So I just wanted to call this out. Oh, I hit the wrong button. Let's hit the right one. So we've isolated it. So the important thing about animations is that they're completely isolated. But what's nice about the way they're isolated is if you remember on the HTML, it was just a CSS class, right? And so we could easily have that CSS class resolve in a style and then either completely disable it or completely make it something else altogether. So it's real easy to manage those dependencies between the two. Business logic, I'm going to go through this pretty quick. This is really where you're going to get the majority of your code reuse. I just have one example here on this timer. I probably didn't need to use Moment.js. I'm a huge fan of Moment.js. If you've had to do anything with dates and times in JavaScript, you know how horrible the API is for the JavaScript's date and time. And if you've used Moment, then I don't have to convince you that it is awesome, both in terms of performance and the API, the documentation. I just could go on and on, but I won't. So a couple of things to note about this. This is a timer service that I've just tacked straight on to our app module. And it's using the interval. It's using an interval service from Angular, which is really just the set interval function in JavaScript. The nice thing about using this one is you can test it, and it has it actually supports promises, which you can see here. We have a remaining or a timer promise that we use to cancel it. This is also wired into the destroy of the controller that it's on. So when a page goes out of scope, it calls the destroy, and in the destroy, we clean up this timer. Otherwise, we'll get memory leaks. So that's important. You can see that this is a kind of standalone class that has cleanup, duration, has started. This is the API needed to use this timer. And I've ring-fenced the use of Moment. Granted, this is a bit cheesy, right? I'm checking to see if Moment's actually installed and throwing. If it's not, there's a better way to do that. There's actually a Moment Angular service that's open source out there that someone's written. I haven't used it, but I probably would if I were to go on with this, because this is kind of meh. This is just, it's sitting in, we can look at where it is. It's in shared, it's sitting here under timer. And that's pretty straightforward. Not a whole lot to say about that. I mean, it's a lot of reuse, pretty much 100% reuse. And it's just real easy to do this with Angular and its dependency injection. View composition. This is, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but when we're talking about reuse, one of the hardest places to get reuse is in the UI, right? Because it can look so different on independent devices. The way that I've done this, and I think this works really well, is you think about the areas of your UI that you want to get 100% reuse, and you put those into reusable pieces. They can either be ng includes, which is just a way of including another file, and that can have a controller and a view model. Or you can use directives, depending on what your needs are. But these are good ways of ring-fencing the code that you know you want to be able to reuse wholesale. And then the structure around that, what I've done in this app is I've defined the, each of these packages has their default HTML, and that's an important point because the way that the apps actually load is they reference the first HTML file that they have to load. And like in Cordova PhoneGap apps, it looks for index.html. In these apps, it looks for default.html. You can change it if you want to in the app manifest, but this is what it's how it's set up. So each project has its own default.html. What I've also done is created an app layout package in each of them also. And this gives me, if you remember, the phone app had a bit of a different UI. It didn't have the stones. The tablet app had the stones. And I needed some way of having containers around the reusable pieces. And this is the way that I did that. So all of my pages are actually defined here. I don't need a controller for these particular pieces, but these are just really small pieces that allow me to include the page that's actually being navigated to, right? And this is inside of the shared space or the shared folder, right? So these pages are different on the tablet app and the phone app, but they reference the same reusable pieces. So it's not duplicated code, it's just a bit, but they're very similar, but it just gives you enough space to put the CSS and the other things you need. I found this actually works really well, and I still get quite a bit of reuse, especially in the logic. Let's see if I remembered everything here. Yep. I'm trying to leave time for questions. Got about 10 minutes left. Themes and colors. I thought this was pretty cool. So let's look at how. Now, for those of you who've used Windows Phone, you know that you can go into your settings and you can specify whether you want a light theme or a dark theme, right? Which actually changes it quite dramatically on the phone. We don't have that ability on normal Windows Store apps. So we need a way of being able to use both the light and the dark on the phone, but still get enough reuse on the tablet app for those same styles. The way I've done that I think works pretty well. I think it could be improved a bit. But let's have a look at this. I have under my shared project CSS, and underneath CSS, I have colors. So what I've done is everywhere in my styles that I reference any color, anywhere, goes in here. Right? Now, I could see that some people might go, really? So if I have like a text box, for example, and I'm specifying its position and its layout and other attributes in CSS, you're going to make me go all the way over here to change the color of things, like the border and things. Yeah, I think so. It does put styling on a particular element in two different places, but if you basically have the practice of putting all of your color in one place, then it does give you the ability to change all of the color attributes, especially for things like the phone. The way this works on the phone is quite ingenious. It uses this is funny, I think it's called the MRT, although good luck finding anything about the term MRT. It's actually in the default template, so I don't know if Microsoft renamed something, but when you load this, I wrote this, but yeah, so this is part of the MRT resource loading functionality, right? But I looked up MRT. All it is it's the managed resource loader. Right? So if you've done any localization in WinJS, then it has some really nice intelligence around the way that you name your files on what language it loads. And it turns out the phone uses the same functionality for doing color, determining whether you have light and dark, which I thought was quite cool. So if we look at this, this file doesn't do anything except import light. But light will get replaced based on what the phone setting is. So then what we have, and I'm using less so that I can define my colors in a little bit more of a reusable way. And then I just reference those colors here. And of course, the CSS that gets generated from the less files is also created. The thing I'm not crazy about this approach is because I feel like I have some duplication. If I go between light and dark, obviously the colors are changing, but all the structure is the same. I haven't really spent a lot of time, but I'm sure there's a way that I could either use a build script or some more clever way of using less so that I could define my colors in a way that still generate the CSS files needed for the resource loader to find them. This works, and it's actually not too bad. I've had to go back and make color changes and other things and add new stuff, and it was relatively easy to manage. But this works really well. And you just reference this file from your HTML. You do have to reference the specific light or dark theme in your Windows Store app, but generally you're not going to have both anyway, so that's typically not a problem. But yeah, I thought that works pretty well. So it uses the resource locator. For the fonts on the home tiles that you saw, those are Font Awesome. How many people have heard of Font Awesome? Web developers in the room, yeah, probably a good 20 or 30% of you. Font Awesome, well, it's awesome. It's cool. Basically, it gives you these icons in a font form, so you get full control over their size. They scale without, you know, the raster look. You can change the color of them. If you wanted to italicize an icon, I guess you could. It doesn't look very good, but you could. So yeah, Font Awesome is really cool. And actually, I won't bring up the web page, but check it out. It's very cool. Sago UI Symbol is the font that Microsoft uses for all of its Windows, for its WinJS projects on both the phone, and it's also awesome. There's a bit of a trick, though. If you like, for the app bar, the way that you specify, I could just switch over real quick. Whoop, no, we're almost finished. I'll switch back over real quick and show you something. There's the way that you define the app bar, so if we go down and look at app bar, now this is using another library put out by a guy by Microsoft that it's called Angular WinJS. I should have mentioned this earlier. I'm using it because it makes using the WinJS controls easier from inside, and I would recommend using it. I don't think they've spent a lot of time on it because I found it's a bit odd in the way that it works, but it's consistent in the way that you use the app bar, the WinJS app bar control, in that when you want to choose an icon, you basically just say the moniker for that icon. And there's a inside of, and I'll just show it to you real quick, because this is a neat trick, because it lets you use these Sago UI symbols in a really clear way. So if you go down under UI strings, there is a mapping between these little monikers, like home and all the other ones, settings, to a Unicode character. Now that's great for app bar icons when you want to use the app bar icon, but what if you want to use one of these Sago UI symbols somewhere else in your app where there's not an app bar? Well, the way that you do it is you look at the Unicode, you can look inside here, and I have some links in the bibliography too. You can go into this file, get the Unicode character, and then use the entity character equivalent of that Unicode character, and then you can use Sago UI icons and treat them the same way with Font Awesome, with sizes and colors that you would with Font Awesome. And so the way you do that is that's that / UE128 is the Unicode character for the Earth, the world, and the translation for that is just the entity character for it. So that's a nice little trick, and you can put that anywhere in a span, and then size it, scale it, and do what you need to. So that's a neat trick. And so, yeah, let's recap. We obviously are trying. We scoped this discussion around apps that lean on the platform for its design guidelines. So we want apps that are consistent and feel familiar on the Windows platform for Windows Phone and Windows Store applications. In order to do that, maximizing reuse but still being able to take advantage of the platform, we have to think in modular terms and isolate things that are specific to WinJS. It might have seemed odd that I was ring-fencing WinJS everywhere, and the reason for that is because it's not unreasonable that we would have a meditation timer on the web. Why not? Right? We can use web UI for the little dongs and other things. There's no reason why this app couldn't live on the web. But I've not used WinJS on the web yet, and I'm not sure I'm quite ready yet. So I want to ring fence that and so that my dependencies are very clear. And that's that's it. I think we still have about 5 minutes for questions if we want to. That's the set of links that I was talking about. And there's some related content, which is all transpired already, as not surprised. And and I'm sure this is the first time you've seen this slide. There's some really great resources out there that you should go and check out, learning material. Cool. We'll leave, we have some time for questions. Thanks, everyone.